At businesses throughout the Lower Mainland, including Antisocial Skate Shop and Gallery, Hits Boutique, Burku's Angels, the People's Co-op Bookstore, Spartacus Books, and Magpie Magazine Gallery. The Friends of CITR card is $5 for CITR members and $15 for anyone else. Check out www.citr.ca/friends for a full listing of Friends of Businesses. Pick up your card today and support CITR Radio.
You do a real quick station ID?
Sure. Hi, this is Olympian. No, I was kidding. This is to a man who has a gold medal in stupidity. Daryl, was it Weiner?
Weiner.
Weiner. On 101.9 CITR?
Radio.
Just CITR.
Yeah, that's cool.
Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
Hi, this is Dara Torres. You're listening to a man who has a gold medal in stupidity. Daryl Weiner. Sorry, let me do it again. Weiner.
That's cool.
Yeah. Sure.
Weiner, like the hot dog.
Weiner, okay. Hi, this is Dara Torres. You're listening to a man who has a gold medal in stupidity. Daryl Weiner of 101.9 CITR. O-C-I-T-R. 321. Hi, this is Dara Torres. You're listening to a man who has a gold medal in stupidity. Daryl Weiner on 101.9 CITR.
All right, everybody, welcome to CITR Radio 101.9 FM, Wiener's Barbecue, airing every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Lots to do on the show today. Got to go get my first guest. He just played his final CIS football game, five-year career, all-time leading passer in the history of the UBC Thunderbirds football program, Blake Smeltzer. UBC lost to the University of Saskatchewan on the weekend in the playoffs in Saskatoon, thus ending their season. He's going to be with us. Lots and lots of stuff to do today. We got a lot of BC Lions stuff, Western Conference Final. Tom Wolski's going to be with us. Lots of UBC stuff to do. The women's field hockey team won the national championship on the weekend. We're going to talk about that, but the guests are going to be on next week. Anyways, folks, I got to do a break. I got to get Blake. We'll be right back. You're listening to 101.9 FM. Welcome back to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. And I promise that today I will not talk about the U.S. Senate race. I will not do a thing on that. I promise. If you want to hear that, please go to another station. Anyways, folks, lots to do today. Starting off the show, as I just mentioned, Blake Smeltzer, quarterback for the UBC Thunderbird football team, will be with us. Dick Mosier, head coach of the UBC Thunderbirds women's soccer team, he'll be with us in about 6 minutes' time. They're going to the Nationals this weekend in Victoria. Wilson Wong will be with us to talk about the UBC Thunderbirds women's field hockey team, who won the national championship on the weekend. We're going to have some players from the team on the show next week. Mike Mosier from the UBC Thunderbird men's soccer team will be with us. Their season ended in Edmonton on the weekend. And then at the 5 o'clock hour, Tom Wolski from the Vancouver province will be with us to talk a little horse racing on the weekend, some basketball. Then we got a whole lot of CFL football guests lined up. Blake, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How's it going?
I'm not bad. With us to start off the show today, the quarterback for the UBC Thunderbirds, Blake Smeltzer, the all-time leading passer in this program's history. And Blake, on the weekend, you did play your final game in Saskatchewan. And for the third year in a row, UBC lost in the first round of the playoffs in Saskatchewan to the Huskies. It was closer this time, a 35-16 loss to the fourth-ranked Huskies. How you feeling, Blake, after that loss?
Well, you can't feel good after a loss, right? But you got to know your season's got to end either with a win or it's going to end with a loss. So ours ended with a loss for a third straight game in Saskatoon. It was a tough one, you know, seeing how it's my last year and got to play my final game with the guys I've been battling hard with for 5 years straight at UBC. So it was a hard one on the field and an emotional one after the game, too.
Yeah, Blake, in this game, you guys were up 10-0 early on in this game. Were you feeling good early, and then what happened?
We scored early, and then we caught a big break on, I think it was a fumble recovery, and then they scored their 10 points, the same thing. We fumbled in our zone and got it tied up. And, you know, the game was at 10-10, and it would have been nice to have a healthy Chris Chizky there, but he was battling an ankle sprain that he couldn't continue. He played a couple drives and just he couldn't do it. So he tried, but it would have been nice to have everyone healthy, but... Nope, that's the breaks.
Yeah, it's a tough way to go out, Blake. Chris Chizky, the conference's leading rusher on the season, was hurt coming into this game with the ankle that you said. Only 5 carries in this game for 17 yards. Sack leader on your Nathan Johnson was out. Running back Barry Jonat, and among others, Braden Smith, the wideout, was out. You guys really got banged up in that Calgary game at the end of the season. That has to be something you guys look back on and just said, why did that have to happen?
Well, that the schedule that the CIS has for us, you know, have playing so many games in that short a time, it really, you know, has a hard time on injuries and getting people injured. So, you know what, we have to fight through it. You can't use the schedule as an excuse for you to lose a game, but, you know, we did.
Blake, happy with your game yesterday. Obviously, a win's a win, but pretty good numbers to go out on. 25 for 43, 309 yards, all-time leading passer in UBC Thunderbirds history. You got to feel good about that.
Oh, it feels great to pass names like Sean Olsen and stuff like that, because I still talk with him on and off. So it's great to have an edge on him now. You know, he was playing over in Europe and maybe trying to recruit me over there. So I don't know, it's good to have that. It's nice to go out on my final game with having some good numbers. But it would be nice to have a win. But no, that's what happens.
Yeah, Blake, we're gonna have actually Dustin Chernosky on the show a little later on, a former teammate of yours. We're gonna be talking Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan BC Lions this weekend, but UBC no playoff win since 1999. I actually called that game. Sean Olsen was the quarterback. It was versus Calgary, mud-filled game, and you know, I would have bet my $1,000 against your $10 that UBC won't have gone, you know, 7 years later, still no playoff wins since that one. Why no playoff wins for this team, Blake?
Well, we've been having tough times with, you know, going through a couple coaches and things like that. But I think Ted Gavai is doing good things with recruiting along with the other coaches. And we're a young program still right now. We lost some key guys this year, you know, with Scott Downey, and don't know if Chris Chizky is going to be returning, and another Apostolos Klimos, our other tackle. So, like, we are, and Brad Newman, like, there's tons of names that we are losing, but we have a lot of young guys that are starting to make a difference, that have shown that they can. So with all the recruits coming in and showing that we have made the playoffs for the last 3 years really helps with recruiting and getting all the new guys in. So, you know, some of the teams like Manitoba may have a lot of older guys. Like, I'm done my 5 years and I'm 22 years old. So there's a lot of guys starting their career at 22. So we are young, but, you know, I see good things for us in the future.
Blake, talking about us in the future and all that, you may be thinking of going into some coaching in some variety here.
Oh, yeah, I got another semester left of school, and Coach Gavai was asking me what I'm doing next year, and, you know, I'm undecided, so I think he's going to try to snake me into doing something.
Awesome. Good for you, Blake. And, Blake, the other one I want to ask you is the 2002 team. The year I called your guys' games, you went 3-5 that season. You guys won your last 3 games. You were 3-0 as a starter that season. Looking back on it now, 5 of the 11 players on defense for you guys that year played or are playing in the CFL. What was missing on that team? I mean, that was a talented team. And you had Julian Radlin on offense, playing for Hamilton now, CFL Rookie of the Year. What was wrong? Why couldn't that team have done better that season? Because that team, especially at the end of the season, seemed you could have beat any guys in the playoffs.
Well, I didn't get there late until, like, I didn't get in until late in the season. It just kind of sparked the team. I'm not saying, like, it was, oh, we won because of me. It was, like, we needed something to spark the team, and just nothing was happening. We were close in with games, like, until, like, the fourth quarter, then the other team brought away with it. But I don't know what it was. I think, you know, some games that you have your defense really shuts down the offense, and then your offense can't get anything going. I just think we never really got connected in that season. And, you know, and then the next season showed when we lost all those key starters, and then the next season wasn't too good, right?
No. 0-8. But it got better from there, and you have to be proud, Blake, that you came into a program, you led them to 3 wins in 3 years as a rookie. They go on, you lose your whole defense, like you just said. You also lose Julian Rattle, and the next year you guys are 0-8. But you have, as the quarterback, built this team up to respectability.
Yeah, well, it's helped. Like, you having guys around me that believe in me really helps, and I've taken, like, a key, like, leadership role on this team, and I hope guys, they look up to me, and, you know, I do what I can to get this team to where it's at now, and hopefully I'll still be around to show some leadership to the younger guys.
Awesome. So, Blake, first time since you've been at UBC, you've got no football to practice or anything like that. Is school going to be a lot easier next semester?
Oh, school. Yeah, it'll be a lot easier, you know, like not having like spring camp or all the early morning workouts, but I got to figure out where my next football is going to be, so I got to keep training too. So
awesome. Blake, great to hear you're not done. Great to hear you're going to keep on going here. Awesome. Blake Smeltzer. Blake, I got to move on here. I'd like to maybe try to do this in a longer version sometime down the road, but we got stuff to do. Blake, thanks a lot for doing this. Great career. Blake Smeltzer, the all-time leading passer for the UBC Thunderbird football team. They lost in the playoffs on the weekend, 35-16 to the fourth-ranked Saskatchewan Huskies for the third straight season in Saskatoon. Blake, thanks for coming on the show, and best of luck with everything. I mean
that. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Thanks, Blake. All right, everybody. Well, here's the story here. We got to take lots of breaks. I got lots of people to get to, and I'm already behind. I'm going to be right back in a moment with Dick Mosier, the head coach of the UBC Thunderbird women's soccer team. They are going to the national championship tournament this weekend in Victoria. We will be right back with the team that won the championships 2002-2003. This is their first championship appearance. It's an 8-team tournament. Since then, I'll be right back with the head coach of UBC Thunderbird soccer, Dick Mosier. Okay, everybody, welcome back to the show with us right now. Coach, I got to ask, did you hear that song? Are you a Blues Brothers fan at all?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, great. Here I am with the head coach of the UBC Thunderbird women's soccer team. He's kind enough to do this interview in the middle of practice, Dick Mosier. So, Coach, UBC going to the national championship tournament this weekend in Victoria. 8 teams make it. Canada West, you didn't win the championship. You lost to Trinity Western 1-0 in the Canada West Championship, but before that, you had gone 10 games, a 10-game stretch where you went 9, tied 1 in a 10-game stretch, no losses. You had all shutouts. You outscored your opponents 28-0. So, Coach, is it kind of good? You know, you lost in the championship, but is it better to get that goal out of the way in the Canada West Championship as opposed to the national championship?
Well, as I say, we certainly don't want to give up one in the Nationals, but you don't want to give that one up either. It would have been nice. You know, certainly the draw is a little bit more favorable if you win Canada West. But, you know, we accomplished sort of mission one was to survive Canada West, survive minus 17 wind chills back there, and get to Victoria. But as I say, it's, you know, Defensively, we are playing well, no doubt about it. We've had to adjust our team a little bit. Beginning of the year, we knew we'd be in a little bit tough in the sense that our two most prominent attacking players are out for the season. And that's the Odenwald, Janine Kerr, who we counted on heavily. Janine's a All-Star from two-time All-Star, Canada West and CIS, and Odie was fresh out of the juvenile ranks. But, you know, as I say, you just make a few adjustments, and one of our adjustments was certainly to defend a little better, be a little better organized from front to back, see if we can keep the ball out of our goal.
Coach, take us back to the weekend in the game versus Alberta in the Canada West semifinals. Due to the fact that Victoria lost in their game to Trinity Western and they were guaranteed a spot in the Nationals, whoever lost between with only three spots available to a Canada West team, whoever lost between you and Alberta, a team that beat you earlier in the year, was going to be out of it. No national championship berth for you guys, and UBC won that game 2-0. Tell us about your team's performance in that crucial game.
Yeah, as you mentioned, it was do or die. You lose, you go home, and we certainly didn't want that. I think the captains, basically, Amy, Bob, and the bat. We have three captains, and Anya, Amy, and Steph, and one in the back, one in the middle, one up front, basically. And Anya came up big with scoring two goals, and Amy was probably the player of the match in the back, and Steph worked her butt off up front. Steph and Chelsea, hey, that's where our defending, that's where those no goals have come from, starting to defend right from the front, and Stephanie Tiber has certainly led us in that aspect as well. So our three captains decided to pick things up and make sure that we weren't going home early.
Awesome. Coach, one last question. Thanks for doing this here with Dick Mosier, the head coach of the UBC Thunderbirds women's soccer team, going to the National Championship Tournament in Victoria this weekend. Your first game, Coach, will be against the Quebec League champions McGill Martlets. They're the only undefeated team playing in the Nationals. What do you know about this team?
Well, traditionally, they're very strong. They're, you know McGill. They've got players from all around the world, and their lineup reflects that. And we've played them a number of times in Nationals. The last three or four years, they've been second, third, or fourth. They haven't won it. In fact, they haven't ever won it, but I'm sure they're hungry for that first-place finish because, as they say, the last three or four years, they have been second or third. In fact, they've medaled all of the last 4 years.
So a tough game.
It's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, tough game right out of the chute. What is a martlet?
I haven't got a clue.
Me neither.
That's a good question.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Awesome. Coach, thanks for doing this in the middle of practice. Dick Mosier, best of luck this weekend. UBC going to the National Championship Tournament in Victoria. Eight teams made it. They're one of them. Got to win three straight to win the national championship. UBC won it in 2002 and 2003. So, Coach, best of luck this weekend.
Thank you very much for all your support. That's great.
Thank you, Coach.
See what we can do.
Awesome. All right, moving right along right now, we're going to get into some field hockey talk. Wilson, are you there?
I am, Daryl.
Wow, I knew it was you. Wilson Wong with us. Wilson, the field hockey team, Christine DePap, actually came by.
Really?
Yeah, but I told them I'll have them on next week.
You sent them away?
I sent them. Well, she was alone, and it's supposed to be her and Jessica Dennis.
Right.
And she said Jessica could come on next week.
Ah.
What do you think? Good call, bad
call? Good
call. Good call?
Because, I don't know. We'll see next week, I guess.
Well, it's that fun drive thing, too, next week, right? So we got to be doing all this stuff, right? How you doing?
Okay, I guess.
Where are you calling from?
Home.
Oh, nice. Oh, well done. All right, we're here with Wilson Wong, so we're going to get into some UBC women's field hockey right now. UBC won the national championship on the weekend, their 11th title, the most in CIS women's field hockey, and the team they beat has 10, so they were playing for bragging rights in this game as UBC now leads UVic 11 titles to 10. Wilson Wong was at it. We are going to have Christine DePap, the CIS Field Hockey Player of the Year. She was the winner of the Liz Hoffman Award. She'll be with us next week along with Jessica Denis, I'm sorry, who was an all-Canadian on the team. But Wilson Wong was covering it. And Wilson Wong was there, so that's who we're going to talk about. So, Wilson, tell us about the national championship field hockey game, UBC, with a 3-1 win over UVic at Wright Field here at UBC.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a lot of fans who sort of followed the team but didn't really know the history between the two teams. It was surprising, I think, even to those who do know the history between the two teams, that UBC was able to jump to a 3-0 lead within the first 27 minutes. They've played 5 other times this year, very even, not much separating them, and I think for most it was surprising that the Thunderbirds did go out to that early lead. They really pressed the Vikes, and on the first goal there, they scored on what was called a short corner, pretty much similar to what you would see in soccer as a set play or a set piece. And talking to Coach Hash Tanji after the game, he had said that basically they had saved a special play for that first set piece, first corner, he said. And basically for that first one, he said, we're going to show Victoria something that they haven't seen all year. And they were able to score on that. And that's how I think really that's what's really set the tone for that game, he said, really threw Victoria off after that first goal.
Trick play worked, huh?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, there are only 4 teams in the Canada West, and they play each other, I believe, 3 times over the year, plus the playoffs. So what he said was a lot of coaches really hide stuff from each other during the year. They don't really show everything they've got. And I guess they were able to come up with something or hide something from Victoria until this very last game.
Right, Wilson, UBC and Victoria played in the round robin to a 2-2 draw, so you're expecting a great game, but UBC, I mean, did Coach Hanji mention, was this their best performance of the year, maybe?
Yeah, what he said was the first half really was the best he's seen the team play this entire year. Lee Sanderson ended up scoring the second goal, which ended up being the winner. She basically took a pass down the right side, approached the what they would call a scoring circle in front of the net, and just nailed a bullet run past the right side of the Vikes goalie, and that was really sort of set the Vikes back, as Kanji said. It turned out to be the winner, and it was Sanderson's second goal of the year in her final game, and that really sort of was sort of the fairy tale ending for her and the 2 other seniors, that Christine DePapp and Sarah Sadler. You know, the fifth-year senior comes back after a year in Spain to rejoin the team, and she's the one who scores the winning goal to sort of send off the seniors with the championship.
Awesome. So, Wilson, we'll move on right now. We'll get into a lot more field hockey next week, but overall, great game. You loved watching it?
You know what? Field hockey, not very many people here in BC or even Canada know about it, but it's really fast. It's really amazing what the players can do in such tight spaces, and you have to realize that there's some really wacky rules in field hockey that you can only use one side of the stick to handle the ball. You know the certain balls above a certain height are relegated to be dangerous balls, so you can't play them. So there's some interesting rules that really make it, I think, harder for the players to handle the ball, and it's really amazing what they can do. It's quick, it's fast, and there are a lot of fans out there that I think really enjoyed it. You know, they went out, saw UBC play, and I think a lot of people would be surprised at how quick and fast this game is.
How many people were there, Wilson?
It was hard to say. I'd say a couple of hundred at least.
Not bad.
Not bad, yeah. A lot of friends and parents of the players got to see their first tournament of the year that they've ever seen, so I think it was good. A lot of the fans actually came out with noisemakers and blowhorns that really added to the atmosphere, and it was really great to see. And of course, it didn't rain, I think, for the first time all tournament in that final game, and I think that really made for a great final there. And UVic, you know, they were down 3-0, but I guess everyone sort of knew that they would really come out and attack and really close the game, and frankly, everyone knew that they had the ability to come back. They were leading 2-0 against UBC in the round robin. The Thunderbirds came back, so I think everyone was kind of thinking that this game wasn't over yet, and they came out after halftime. They scored almost right away and spent the rest of the half attacking. So it was a really exciting game. I think another sort of kudos should go out to their goalie, UBC's goalie, Graham, who played for most of the year with a torn knee ligament, and that was something that very few people, I think, knew about. So it was quite a great performance by UBC this year.
Awesome. UBC wins the national championship. They're 11th in their program's history. UVic is the team they beat 3-1. UVic has 10 national championships in their program. That is the top two in the country. Those teams are the leaders, and UBC currently leads Victoria. Well, Wilson, thanks for doing this. And just so you know, we've got the field hockey players here next week, and the women's soccer players are going to be here next week. You're going to cover that on the weekend. So I'm going to need your help next
week.
Well,
actually, I'm double booked.
Next week?
No, I'm double booked for the weekend.
Oh, yeah, you got the Grey Cup too, huh?
I've got the Western Final, yeah, BC and Saskatchewan. So I don't think I'll be able to make it out to Victoria, which is a shame.
All right, then I don't need you. Wilson, thanks a bundle for doing this. Thanks for the report. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
Thanks, Wilson.
Bye.
All right, that was Wilson Wong. I got one more guest in our UBC Sports Hour, as Mike Mosier, the head coach of the UBC Thunderbirds men's hockey team, is going to be with us. I'm already behind schedule. You're listening to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM. Let's play Blues. Oh, that might be a caller. Well, I gotta play.
We're so glad to see so many of you lovely people here tonight. And we would especially like to welcome all the representatives of Illinois' law enforcement community who have chosen to join us here in the Palace Hotel Ballroom at this time. We do sincerely hope you all enjoy the show. And please remember, people, that no matter who you are and what you do to live, thrive, and survive, there are still some things that make us all the same. You, me, them, everybody. Everybody.
Everybody needs somebody. Everybody needs somebody to love. Someone to love.
Someone to love.
Sweetheart to miss.
Sweetheart to miss.
Sugar to kiss.
Sugar to kiss.
Welcome back to the show here as the beat goes on with us. Right now with us is the head coach of the UBC Thunderbirds men's soccer team, who on the weekend, defending national champions, lost to the number 8 Calgary Dinosaurs at Footfield in Edmonton, thus eliminating the number 4 ranked UBC Thunderbirds from winning the national championship and defending their title this season. With us on the line right now, the head coach of the UBC Thunderbirds men's soccer team, Mike Mosier. So, Coach, how are we doing today?
The sting from the weekend is still not necessarily left. So, but hey, we got no other choice, right?
Right. So, Coach, that game, a tough game versus Calgary. You had to play on a fast, slick surface. It was a small field. Calgary got the only goal in the game on a long, deep throw in the 58th minute. Tough way to lose like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think however you're going to go out, it's, you know, presumably it's going to be difficult. It was a real disappointing loss, you know, for myself, for all the guys. You know, because at the end of the day, I mean, Calgary is a team that I think, you know, we all thought, you know, that we should beat. You know, we didn't go into the game overconfident or anything like that. You know, we were all very aware that, you know, that they're a decent team. But, and I think, you know, the conditions on the day were a little bit limiting for us and helped them. So, you know, the conditions weren't too bad in terms of the weather. I mean, it was cold. But we've played in worse, and but the narrow field, unfortunately, was probably our biggest downfall, because we're a team that likes a big field to spread teams out, and you know, that caused for us to not play so well. Well, played a role in us not playing so well on the day, I think.
Coach, you did win the bronze medal the following day. Blair Robinson, one of the 5 seniors on the UBC men's team, got the goal in the 90th minute to beat Alberta 2-1. Any consolation in winning that bronze medal?
Yeah, I think there was. I mean, I was really happy with the guys, you know, sort of bouncing back you know, after a difficult loss, you know, the day before, because certainly our intention was always to be playing for the Canada West Championship and, you know, maybe even having qualified for Nationals going into that. But, you know, you just got to deal with sort of what comes your way and, you know, having suffered that disappointing loss and the fact that there were so many seniors, you know, it gave us an opportunity. Hey, let's you know, try and draw something from this. The fact that our only two previous losses of the entire season had been to Alberta, you know, helped as a bit of a motivator as well. So, you know, I'm not one that's too big on bronze medal games because, you know, I think there's only one medal that we go to play for. But that was sort of what we were dealt with. And, you know, in this particular case, there was a little bit of consolation taken from getting the result on the Sunday against Alberta.
Coach, 9-2-3 regular season record this year. Five seniors leaving the team this season. You are going to host the Nationals next season, so it won't be this situation next year. You get the automatic berth to the Nationals. How is the team looking for next season?
Well, I think quite good. I mean, you know, it's too bad that you know, we lose all these guys because they're good players and good people to have in the program. But it's something we have been preparing for a couple of years. You know, we've known for a few years that we're going to be hosting, so we've kept a bit bigger squad. You know, I think we've got some real good continuity that, you know, as players, well, we lost four or five really key players from last year. And, you know, still we're one of the best teams in the country again this year. So, you know, it's not going to be easy by any means, but I still think that we will be well positioned you know, in the hunt for when we host next year and hopefully the years beyond. I mean, that's really the goal right now is you know, to put ourselves in a position to win almost every single year.
Awesome. UBC Thunderbird head coach Mike Mosier. Once again, UBC lost in the Canada West semifinals to the number 8 Calgary Dinos in Edmonton. They are eliminated from winning a national championship this season. They were the champions last year, so I guess you can't win every year, coach, and you're going to be in the national championships again next year, so things are looking good. Head coach Mike Mosier, coach, thanks a lot for doing it, and thanks for everything you've done for me this season, and best of luck in the future.
No problem. Thank you, Daryl.
Thank you, coach. Okay. All right. We're now going to go on to our Wiener's Barbecue portion of the show. When I'm back, Tom Wolski from the Vancouver Province Sport of Kings television show is going to be with us. We're going to talk a little what happened at the Breeders' Cup on the weekend. There was, unfortunately, some tragedy in that event. We'll talk some basketball. A very tragic event, historic basketball event. One of the most historic events took place 15 years ago today. We're going to talk about all that stuff. Tom Wolski from the Vancouver Province will be with us when we start the other portion of my show right after this.
Hi, this is Burt Reynolds. You listen to Wiener's Barbecue, and they're not giving me a damn thing for this.
everybody. Welcome back to the show. With us on the line right now, Tom Wolski from the Vancouver Province and the Sport of Kings television show. Tom, how are you?
I'm fine. How about you?
I'm not bad. I'm hanging in. Now, Tom, I got to ask you a question.
Yeah, how's our audience doing out there? Are they having a good time?
You tell me. How's our audience, folks? Woo-hoo! Tom, that song I just played, Holding Out for a Hero, what movie in the big scene at the end was that used in?
You got me.
You don't know?
No.
All right, okay, I'll set the scene in the movie. Can I do that?
Sure.
The bad guys are getting away on a plane, okay? They're getting away on a plane, and he's on some sort of a... He's being driven in a car, but he's up... There's like a big flight of stairs coming out of the back of the seat, and he's trying to drive and stop the car, stop the plane, as they're driving him up to the plane. And as he got there, he landed right against the airplane door. The door fell down, and he entered. Do you know?
No.
Who's Harry Crumb?
Man, you're going back ages.
Tom, that's your movie.
That's my flick is right with John, yeah.
For those of you that don't know, we talked about it on this show before. Tom Wolski, I told you, Tom, one of my favorite movies ever. It is.
Who's Harry Crumb?
Crazy. Do you remember? Yep.
When I was in Kentucky over the weekend, that was on one of the movie channels down there.
Did you watch it?
No, I got the DVD.
Oh man, the line they go. They go, "Are you crazy?" He goes, "Crazy, crazy like a fox." I love it. I love it.
All right, you made my day.
Who's Harry Crumb? I'm so happy you're in that movie. Do you have the suit from your prop, where your costume in that movie?
Those weren't props. Those were our regular riding colors.
Do you still have that?
Oh yeah, I still got my riding pants and my saddle and my boots. And the only thing I don't have, obviously, is the silks, because we're not responsible for the silks. The owners are responsible for the silks that we wear.
Tom, anything that was in Who's Harry Crumb is A-okay with me.
I agree with you. I agree.
Anything at all. All right, Tom.
Did you like Annie Potts in that movie?
Which one was he?
Annie Potts.
I don't know. I don't know that name.
Okay,
but
she played. Well, she was in the movie. She played.
Oh, she was the one in Designing Women.
Yep.
Oh, she was great in that movie.
Yeah, they shot that, like I told you, in Shaughnessy.
Yeah, she was quite gorgeous in that one.
Yep, she was a great lady. So
quite gorgeous.
Is a great lady.
Yeah. Awesome. Tom Wolski with us from the Vancouver Province Sport of Kings television show. Tom was at the Breeders' Cup in Louisville.
Yeah.
And Tom, I have my parents get ESPN. Okay?
Yes.
And the coverage on ESPN for this horse race, for the Breeders' Cup, was outstanding. If you lived in Canada, you had trouble finding out if it was going on.
You got screwed.
You also had the college football game. I'm sure you saw that was going on. You had Louisville, West Virginia.
That town was going nuts that night.
It was the sporting capital of America on the weekend was Louisville, Kentucky. But, Tom, I mean, the difference, ESPN did a ton of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Up here, if I hadn't watched ESPN, I barely know the race is going on.
You know, it's an interesting point you made, because fortunately, because I was there, I had a friend of mine. I haven't got the tape yet, but I was able, because I was busy watching the races at Churchill. But a friend of mine taped me. I believe they taped me the ESPN coverage on two tapes, because it was 6 hours long, and it was supposedly excellent. It was excellent coverage of what they did as far as covering everything, the highs and the lows. And it's a shame, like what I wrote in the column, that this ever happened, that it didn't get covered here in Canada when it's an international event. And you know, I don't know if we will go in this direction when we start the conversation, but Breeders' Cup people, the Breeders' Cup Limited, were unaware that this was not going to be shown here. And ESPN, when I wrote my column, I had to talk to some of the upper management, and they were surprised too, but it was strictly a TSN call. And since I wasn't here, you can answer me. Did they show a football game, a golf game in place of that? Because the golf game actually could have been seen on ABC for anybody with cable in Ontario, in the Buffalo area, and in the Vancouver area, on the Seattle area. So they piggybacked the golf tournament and preempted the Breeders' Cup. Am I correct in that?
You know what? I have no idea what TSN was showing at that time.
They were showing the third leg of the golf tournament that ABC picks up the third and fourth, and they did, and USA Network picks up Thursday and Friday. So what they did is they did a repeat, and they really snubbed the Breeders' Cup people, and they were pretty pissed off.
Well, and the other thing, Tom, that ESPN did was with that Louisville-West Virginia game. I mean, that was a huge football game. This is the biggest game in the history of the Louisville Cardinals football program, and they had all the old legends were at the game. They were interviewing them all throughout the game, and Louisville undefeated, number 5, taking on West Virginia undefeated, number 3. Whoever won that game basically has an excellent shot. They still got to win enough. They still got to beat Rutgers, but they probably go to the national championship if they win out from there. So it's almost a quarterfinal match. They were saying it's like an NFL playoff game, basically, as far as getting to the Super Bowl. But how popped was that town for that football game? I just want to ask that.
You know, that's an interesting question. That's a good question, because when I flew in Tuesday, the cab driver, as I was going to the hotel, the Galt Hotel, where the media was staying for the Breeders' Cup, he asked me, are you going to be going to the game Thursday night? And I said, no. And he said, well, everybody in this town is pumped, and it's a sellout, like 49,000 people. But that's all that town talked about. And what they did is Louisville converted one of their streets. It'd be a hell of an idea for Vancouver. They call it Fourth Street now. But they put all these bars, there's all these new bars, and they really upgraded the city itself. And they have like little roadblocks to go in this area, so there's no rowdyism. And that night, after the event that I went to, because we're really loaded up with events to go to while we're there for the Breeders' Cup, really makes it comfortable for the media. But after our event, we went down to Fourth Street, and let me tell you, after Louisville won, it was a zoo. People were, this was like they did win the championship.
Yeah, that's why it's my favorite season, actually, of any sport. Hockey bores me, and I'm a big fan of the regular season games meaning a ton. That's what I'm a fan of. I love the U.S. college football season. It may be screwed up with no playoffs, but it makes those regular season games just incredible.
Well,
that's what it does.
And what's good about it is the season, it's like why I love NFL football. The season is so short, and as you just related, college football, every game is important, where hockey and basketball and baseball.
Even the NFL a little bit too, Tom. Nothing like U.S. college football. There's nothing like it.
Of course. I'm strictly an NFL. I'm a professional football NFL fan, but I do like college football too. So don't get me wrong, but I have my little addiction with NFL football.
Yeah, awesome. And, Tom, I will say this, though, is I tuned into that Louisville-West Virginia game and on ESPN on Thursday night, watched it at my folks' place. They did a hell of a job promoting. They promoted the hell out of it, the Breeders' Cup on the weekend. I mean, it was just something watching the biggest sports network in the world. I think it is, Tom, ESPN, just doing an incredible job promoting this event. And here, TSN or anybody here in Canada, I mean, you barely got a whisper. It just shows you where we're at.
It was really sad when I found out 2 weeks ago. Because, hey, the Breeders' Cup limited people management, they weren't aware of this for a month. ESP weren't even aware about not being covered, because don't forget TSN is an affiliate of ESPN. Because Monday Night Football, whatever you get out of the States and you see on TSN, you're going to see a little ESPN logo next to it, because that's their boss. And they were quite stunned. And when I was fortunate enough to talk to a couple of people involved, but they said it's pretty much guaranteed that will not happen again, because it shouldn't happen this time, especially when they piggybacked a golf game that was missing Tiger Woods anyway, that was also on ABC, which deprived not only horse racing fans but sporting fans in general to see this international event that had horses from six different countries racing in it, and people from all over the world. It's supposed to be an international event, and here we weren't showing it. It will always be a pet peeve with myself, and as I said, to know that they just used a football game, a golf game in place that was piggybacked, that's terrible.
My one problem with the Breeders' Cup, Tom,
sure, go ahead.
With the coverage, was they should have shown more on the television when the Breeders' Cup Classic was actually going to take place. It's sort of like in the when you get a boxing fight and you got the undercards, they'll always kind of update you what's coming up next, when the main event is. And they just weren't doing that enough. That was my pet peeve with it.
You see, I couldn't comment on it. I didn't get a chance to see it.
That was me. That was me from a guy watching from my couch. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch the ESPN coverage because they do cover horse racing pretty good, and so does an NBC. I mean, what do you think about Trevor Denman?
Which one? Who's the announcer?
Yeah.
Not pretty good, I guess.
Yeah, he replaced Tom Durkin since Tom Durkin's been doing it since '84. This is the first one he's missed. In fact, I've only missed one Breeders' Cup. So I mean,
Tom, I was trying, but to be honest, I kept missing races because I'd be, I'd be changing channels and stuff. Awesome. Well, Tom, staying with the Breeders' Cup is a tragedy did take place, and it happened in horse racing this year. It was just one of those years. Pine Island, I got that name right. Pine Island.
Yep, you do.
Was euthanized after the Breeders' Cup distaff.
Right.
And she was one of the favorites in that race. Fleet Indian, the other favorite, suffered a career-ending injury during the same race. Did it put a little bit of a cloud over the Breeders' Cup?
Yeah, it took a little heart out of it, you know, quite a bit of, well, actually, everybody took a little heart out of it because no one wants to see any kind of accident, then especially to have a filly that who was so valuable as a broodmare, and this was her last race, for crying out loud, and to have that happen, that was very sad, and it was tragic. In fact, the jock was quite shaken up over it too, and it was, like I said, you just hate to say it's one of those things, but it's not a nice thing to say whether it's an animal or a person is euthanized, but it was sad to see.
Is injuries like this in horse racing, Tom? I mean, we saw it happen to Barbaro. It's like, you know, NASCAR races, there are going to be accidents. There are going to be these horrendous crashes. It's just the same thing in horse racing. These things are pretty much unavoidable. They are going to happen at some point.
That's the hazards of anything that has so much speed, when you're dealing with NASCAR, for example. In horse racing, the danger element is always there, and we as athletes that are performing it, whether it be as a NASCAR driver or as a professional jockey, we're totally aware of how dangerous it is, but you do not ever think about it. And I don't like to think that that's why people go to watch NASCAR to see accidents. And well, definitely don't feel people go to the horse race to see accidents also or injuries. But they are there, and they will happen. We're very fortunate we haven't had too many in the last couple of years. When it comes to accident, serious injuries in horse racing. And luckily, like with Barbaro, he's going to make a full recovery. And he's going to, we talked about it on a couple, he's actually going to, him going to be able to go to stud. I mean, that's fantastic for this horse. That literally was dead.
This was
a miracle horse.
Sorry, Tom. Barbaro, we'll get to Bernardini and the Breeders' Cup at the end here. But Barbaro, I caught it. Was it yesterday or today the cast came off?
Yeah, today the cast came off.
Today the cast came off, nearly 6 months after his horrifying accident at the Preakness. Barbaro had his cast removed today. He had his cast removed today, and you say this guy's going to get to have the fun he deserves and go to stud and not have to use that girdle or anything like that?
No, they think he's going to be able to actually, they're quite sure that this horse will have a happy stud career in a couple of years. I know that news was released about the cast, because I know on our show coming up Saturday, I believe on our on-track segment with Carmen, I believe we've got some footage of it that we're going to air about him gonna lead a healthy life, man. It's an unbelievable story. I mean, when you literally first loss I know that recovered from it.
Wow. And
lameitis.
Yeah. How much did it cost the medical attention? How much was the medical attention you think that was actually put into this horse?
You know, it's a great question, because that's always been asked of Dr. Dean Richardson, who did the operation for the University of Pennsylvania, the New Bolton Center. And right now, they do not know the cost that it's going to that the Jacksons are going to have to pay. I would hope that the Jacksons, you know, because they put New Bolton on the map as far as a veterinarian hospital, but it's going to be astronomical, and it's a good thing they got deep pockets and they love this horse. More than anything, they just love the horse, so forget the deep pockets.
And but, I do take it, sorry, Tom, I do take it that I will never be treated as well as this horse got treated on his recovery.
I don't think anybody will unless you lived in Dubai.
Yeah.
If that's, you know, because it was, and it's going to keep coming. Those bills are just going to keep coming. I had a chance to meet Dr. Richardson because what we do is we have the National Turf Riders dinners on a Wednesday. Once again, they always have things for us to do, and the people that won the awards were for their contribution to racing were the Jacksons, the Barbaro team, and Dr. Richardson also was awarded for his contribution to the sport and making the sport more popular with the public. So they were there, and they were gracious speakers too. But they're just nice people. And the Jacksons, they didn't have to do it, but they did it. And this horse, whether he was going to make it to a stud, Mr. Jackson said at the podium, whether he was going to make it as a stallion or not, he had a life forever on their farm. So, and that's the way it is. And it's the way it should be when you have a horse that makes money for you or treats you well. No horse should have it. It's only one way for us to go, and that's happy retirement, like all of us.
We hope so.
Yeah.
Well, a feel-good story there. And, Tom, the Breeders' Cup Classic itself, was this a good race? Bernardini, who is leading as the horse of the year, the heavy favorite coming off of six straight victories, unable to pull it off as Invaser? Do I have that pronunciation
Invaser.
Right?
Invaser. You know, you didn't get it wrong. It's been pronounced three different ways, but it's I-N as a nomin, V-A-S-O-R. So Invaser, you can pronounce it that way and be correct. And you can pronounce it any other way you want. You're still going to get it right, more likely.
So Invaser took the $5 million Breeders' Cup Classic. Was it a good race, Tom? I mean, he won by one length.
Believe it or not, I was just watching it when you called because I've got a copy of it because we're going to try to air that race on our show once again. To plug the Sporting King said, we're going to try to air the Classic because most reason we're going to try to air as many races the next 2 weeks is no one had a chance to see them because they weren't on television. So we only got three more shows to go for the Thoroughbred season, and we're going to try to show a couple of those Breeders' Cup races. But as far as your answer to was it, did he deserve to win? He was the best horse in the race, without a doubt, and will be horse of the year. I don't know if he will be horse of the year. There's no way you cannot take away from him because he's lost one race and he's won the Triple Crown in Argentina, where the Sheik's bought him. They were looking for a horse, and they got so many connections. They sent their man down to Argentina because a blood horse agent and a blood horse agent. For you out there is someone that studies pedigrees for horses, and wealthy owners will hire these people to go look for top horses. And through a contact in Argentina, the Sheiks went down, sent their man down, and that's where they got this horse. And he won the Triple Crown from down there. And ironically, I think they paid $1.2 million. And wow, I mean, look what he's done. He's lost one race, and our only hope is that they give him a chance to race a little bit next year. And I believe they're going to take him to their own country in Dubai and run him in the Dubai Cup and then probably retire him.
Awesome. And Bernardini, as Tom mentioned, retired today.
You're right.
Retired today. And, Tom, you got a couple minutes here?
Sure. Go right
ahead. Okay, I want to get off horse racing.
Hey, before you go.
Yeah.
Speaking of horse racing, what did you think about a mare called Ouija Board?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
She's won. This is her second time that she's won a Breeders' Cup race, and she's probably the best mare in the world right now.
Really?
If you didn't catch it, then there's no sense discussing it.
I'll try next time, Tom.
Next time.
Hopefully
everybody can see it next year.
Yeah, hopefully. Tom, I wanna go on to basketball for a moment here.
Yeah, I haven't followed it much this year.
Well, this is not about this year. It was a very historic and tragic event that took place 15 years ago today. And I just want to get your thoughts on this one. It was 15 years ago today that one of the greatest players I will ever see, and this was just huge, huge news at the time. Magic Johnson, 15 years ago today, announces that he's HIV positive. Tom, your thoughts on that day 15 years ago?
Well, you know, I was living in Los Angeles when that happened, and, you know, and that was a tremendous thing. That was an amazing announcement for him to come out and make for two reasons. He was such a well-respected individual not only in basketball but in his personal life. For him to admit that, hey, he messed up, you know, it happened, but for him to let people know that, hey, he's going to beat it, and that it wasn't the end of the world, and for him to go on and do it. He's a philanthropist, you know. He's built in Compton. He's got this big. He's built multiplex movie theaters in California in areas that are depressed, and he hires minorities to work work at all his businesses. So he's just an extraordinary man. And for him to come out with that announcement, I thought it was fantastic. Your first thought, in all honesty, holy man, this guy's got AIDS. Jesus, how the hell did he get this? And then when he comes on and says, well, it was promiscuous, it happened, and he is going to beat it. And he did, basically, 16 years ago, I guess you could say he beat it. So, yeah, I thought it was a hell of a gutsy thing for someone to come out and do, especially basketball, because, you know, it's a it's a sport for guys. And
you can say homophobe.
It's a homophobic sport, you know, like most sports are. And no one wants to be around a subject like be around. Could they get worried if he bleeds or what something? And yet he stuck to his gut. He stuck to his commitment to let the public know, and be an inspiration for people that do have HIV, and also for kids to don't do this because it could cost your life. And he was fortunate; it didn't cost him his.
Yeah, and he was some kind of player, wasn't he, Tom?
Well, my two favorite players were Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. And, you know, in the era that I knew, when I looked back at some black and white and being from Boston, looking back at some black and white footage, and especially with Red Auerbach passing away this last week, the old-time Celtics, I mean, they were something else with their teams. Like, especially when Red Auerbach says Bob Cousy and Bill Russell probably perhaps the two greatest basketball players. Not only did he coach, but he ever managed, and then he threw in Larry Bird as his third. But this one, pretty good ball players. Not now, but back in the older days.
Well, what would you say, Tom? That those 1980s, very early 1990s, just before Chicago took off, and actually just right around just before the Pistons took off, it was that was the heyday of basketball.
I agree, definitely. It's played a little different now, you know.
I don't like it right. I'm not into it right now.
Well, that's why when we talked previously, when you said you want to give me a call, we'll talk about basketball. I was up front. I said, you know, I really haven't followed it this year because I'm not that interested in it. I'm tired of seeing these people with their posses and all their bling on bling and the stuff that they're bringing to the table which is not good for young people anymore that use them as role models. Outside of like LeBron James, who they say is actually a good role model, there isn't that many. It's a minority, the good guys in basketball right now, and it's not like the old days. I mean, I don't know, you know, it's not like the Larry Birds who played the sport and Magic Johnson and Bob Cousy and Michael Jordan. I mean, they played because they want to play. Now this is all about money.
Well, the play I remember with Magic Johnson, Tom, for some reason, I always think of this one. It was in a playoff game. I'm guessing Portland, I could be wrong, I think the Lakers are up 1 point with about 5 or 6, maybe it was 10 seconds to go. He got the defensive rebound, and he took the ball, and he threw it the length of the court. Do you remember this play? The ball rolled and rolled, and it was all the way down there, so no Trailblazer was going to pick it up at that point. And they might have even been out of timeouts. I don't know, but the ball just rolled and rolled and rolled, and it went out of bounds with 1 second to go. It was one of the most incredible plays I've ever seen. And it's just, he was such a smart player, Magic Johnson.
He was a clutch player, too.
Yeah.
See, you know, back to what you're saying about the late 80s and the early 90s, basketball has changed so much too. Because don't forget, there was, how about Jerry West? He was he was an image that every kid could look up to. There was Bill Walton, as rebellious as he was in his day, playing with Portland. He was the guy that just lived to play basketball. That's what they did. They grew up wanting to do something. Now it's not. It's the players now aren't. It's not all about basketball, and that's why we're going to see more Europeans in this league. This league's going to change. We talked about it about 2 months ago. This league's going to change. It's going to be 60. What I believe they said in 10 years, it's going to be 60 to 70% Europeans are going to be in this league.
Well, Tom, all I got to say about basketball, and I got to get going here, and thanks a ton for doing this, Tom, is back in the late 80s, see, I never watched Jerry West days or Bob Cousy days, but back in the late 80s, early 90s, especially late 80s, they could shoot.
Oh.
They could shoot. They had fundamentals.
They had a hook shot. They had a, you know, they had, what do you call it, it just skips on right. But they had the hook shot and all that. So it was good.
Tom Wolski, Tom, remember this song. It's from Who's Harry Crumb, okay?
Okay.
Tom Wolski, Tom, thanks a ton for doing it.
Thank you. My pleasure is always with you because you do know what you're talking about, and I love that.
Well, I try. Thanks, Tom.
Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, Dustin Chernosky, former UBC Thunderbird from the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, they're going to be coming to BC Vancouver this weekend to take on the BC Lions in the Western Conference Final, fresh off their win versus the Calgary Stampeders. I don't know what we're doing after that. I've got about three people I can call, and hopefully some of them answer. Anyways, you're listening to 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
And you're listening to CITR 101.9.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Wieners Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Dustin, are you there?
I'm here, Wiener.
How are you?
I'm fine, brother. How are you doing?
I'm not bad. So where are you? Are you in Regina? Where are you?
I'm in the birthplace of fun, Regina, Saskatchewan.
The birthplace of what?
The birthplace of fun.
Sun?
Fun, F-U-N.
Oh, the birthplace of fun.
Yeah, I didn't know about that till I got here either.
Yeah, you're from Edmonton?
Originally.
You're from Edmonton, and you come out here to school. Now you're in Regina. So you're really getting to know the western part of the country.
Yeah, sure. you around.
What's your favorite city so far?
Vancouver, hands down.
Oh, hands down, hey?
Hands down.
So do you feel trapped in Regina? Do you feel like, why am I here?
If it wasn't for all the open space, I guess I'd feel trapped. But definitely the lack of sushi doesn't help make anything more comfortable.
And it's a lot, but I, you know what I'll say? You got a fun casino out there.
Well, this is true.
You do, don't you? You know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly.
I go back, Dustin. It was your very first CIS football game. I think it was called CIAU back then, actually. So we'll go with that. And you guys went to Regina, and I ended up at the casino that night. I don't know why. I don't have a clue, but I remember being at a casino in Regina. It was a good time.
Well, the casino in Regina is pretty much the biggest building here. And so the odds of ending up there are pretty good.
Is it still... Not raining, pouring for 10 minutes, not raining, pouring for 10 minutes. Does that still happen?
They actually don't even have weather forecasts in the city. It's just more like stick your head out the window and what you see is what you get.
For that time being, though.
Exactly.
It could change in a second. And how are the mosquitoes?
Huge.
Yeah?
I hit one with a baseball bat the other day.
Well, I remember that game you guys, I don't know if you remember, it was your first game at UBC. I mean, the mosquitoes were nasty that night.
Oh, I remember it.
Yeah, they were nasty that night.
There were some of the guys on the team must have had easily a couple hundred bites on them.
And you're not joking.
Not even joking. It looked worse than chicken pox.
Dustin, before we get into the Western Conference Final here, okay? I got to go back in time, and I got to talk about your UBC team. They just lost to Saskatchewan in the playoffs on the weekend. Don't know if you know about it. Blake Smeltzer's last game. They lost to the Huskies for the third straight season. Why can't the UBC football team win a playoff game? They haven't won one, Dustin, since 1999.
Well, 99 was the end of an era. That was the Vanier Cup.
No, 97 was the Vanier Cup.
Well, 97 was the Vanier Cup, but the guys still stuck around until about the 99 year, and then, you know, they all graduated, and we had to rebuild. And I guess we've been rebuilding ever since, but I guess... You know, we're doing a lot better now, though.
Yep.
And you can see every year we're getting closer and closer to a Vanier Cup contending team. And I really thought we were going to go a lot further this year. I really thought we had it, especially in Chris Chinsky.
Well, he got hurt for that playoff game, hey? He had 5 carries for 17 yards in that game. Couldn't play because of an ankle injury.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so that did him in.
Okay, well.
There you go, huh?
All I know is that game cost me a lot of money. There's a lot of old Saskatchewan guys on this team.
Oh, you got a lot of old Huskies on that roster?
Oh, yeah, there's a few.
Who you got?
Well, we got Gino Mikowski, our all-star O-lineman.
Yeah.
And then basically there's just all the Saskatchewan guys want to bet anytime UBC is playing. So we've got Neil Hughes is an old Rams guy.
Yeah.
Mike Mahoney's from out here. Kennedy Nikasin's from out here. Chris Zarka likes to pretend that he's from out here, but he's really a Surrey.
How about their old punter on the Regina Rams, John Ryan, punting for the Packers?
Oh yeah, he's killing it down there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's doing really well for himself. Everybody's pretty proud of him.
That's awesome. So, back to the UBC team though, Dustin, I asked Blake Smeltzer about this. Blake was on the show earlier today. Is 2002? I want to go back to that team. You had Jason Taylor, Art Tolhurst, Sandy Beveridge, Javi Glatt, all on defense. 5 guys who are either playing or played in the CFL. How did that team go 3-5?
That's a good question.
5 of 11 guys played in the CFL. I mean, that's insane.
That was huge. And that's just on defense. I mean, don't forget, we had Julian Radlin. We had Amar Sangera. And who else? Greg Schaefer. They all went pro, too. So, yeah, we had a ton of talent. But you know what happened in that year, I'm sure you remember, is that's the year that we had a coaching change.
Yep.
And that happened in the off season. So I think it was Jay Prepchuk at the time. See, this is the year that I came. So Jay Prepchuk was the guy that recruited me. And so I came under him. But he had left, so he finished recruiting and then took off. And then Lou Delorier took over the reins kind of too late. Everyone had already committed to their schools. So in my rookie season, which was 2002, I think we had something like 8 or 9 rookies on the team that year.
And your defense, if you looked at time of possession, you must have guys felt you were out there about 45 minutes a game, hey?
We got a lot of practice with our tackling.
Awesome. All right, you want to talk Western Conference Final, Dustin?
I want to talk all about it.
All right, Dustin Chernowski from the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Who, Dustin, you made a big tackle on special teams. You know your name was on the CBC there at the end of that game?
Oh, it's possible.
You made a big tackle on special teams. Luka Kanji, former Clan, you're playing with an SFU Klansman there, kicks the kick to give Saskatchewan the lead late in that game. And on the kickoff return, it's just eluding me right now. Who's the Calgary kick returner?
Oh, what's his name? Howell.
Howell, he's coming down the field. He's about to get it, and Dustin Chernowski makes the big tackle there for the Rough Riders. But that game, Dustin, you guys are down 21-5 at the half. You end up beating Calgary 30-21, so you outscore them 25-0 in the first half. You had to be loving that.
Oh, it was great. We weren't exactly loving it going into halftime. But, I mean, our defense was holding up. We'd made a couple of small mistakes on defense, but we made some big mistakes on special teams. Some of them was our fault, and some of them I thought were some questionable blocks by the Calgary Stampeders. But either which way, you know, they put some points on the board. And our offense was close, but just couldn't get it started. And so we knew that as long as we could hold ourselves in with the defense, offense would pick it up. We knew special teams was going to turn it around in the second half. And sure enough, we did. I mean, Kent Keith came out of the backfield one of the first couple plays from scrimmage in the second half. Takes it 76 yards for a major. I mean, we knew right there. Like, we knew what we had to do. It was just a matter of going out and doing it, and that's definitely what we did.
Awesome. And, Dustin, how great, how cool, and how pumped were you guys with those Saskatchewan Regina fans? Just, I mean, they were the loud folks in that stadium. How pumped were you to see those guys?
Oh, it's always a treat to play in Calgary. There's so many expats from Saskatchewan hanging out in Calgary, and every time we show up, it seems like there's more and more fans, and this game was huge. A lot of people came out. It's only a six-hour drive. From Regina to Saskatchewan, or from Regina to Calgary. So a lot of them came out. I think we had something like 13 or 15,000 fans out there.
Was that that? So you had about half of what they did.
Oh yeah, and wow. I mean they cheer three times louder too. So it's great playing out there for them. And the funny thing is that when you go to McMahon Stadium, they have all the Calgary fans sitting in the middle sections of the stadium. But on either side is all the Saskatchewan fans. So it looks like a really strange opposite Canadian flag. You've got all the red in the middle and all the green on the edges. And it's just so loud, and it's such a treat to play there.
Opposite Canadian flag. Where's their green in our Canadian flag, Dustin?
You know what I'm talking
about. Dustin Chernowski from the Saskatchewan Rough Riders with us right now. Dustin, you're coming to BC, the city where you played your school, and the one I want to talk to you about is Javi Glatt, having a hell of a year here at BC. Do you root for Javi during the season? Do you talk to Javi? And, I mean, he's having an excellent season here.
Right. No, we're all really, really proud of Javi and what he's accomplished this year. You know, he's been in the works for a few years now, and he's been developing on special teams and playing his role as a backup linebacker. And now that he finally gets the chance to play, you know, he's definitely taking advantage of it. And he's having a hell of a year, and all the guys out at UBC are just really, really proud for him, because he's football is his life, and he spends so much time watching film and working out in the gym and just getting ready for the games. And so it's really transferring well on the field for him, because you can see that all the work that he's been doing in the off season and the film rooms and stuff is really starting to pay off for him. He's got some interceptions, he's got a handful of sacks and just a ton of tackles. So yeah, absolutely, we're all really rooting for him, but not so much on Sunday.
Well, football's his life, Dustin, except when he's filming, what is it, deodorant commercials?
he did a Gatorade commercial.
Was it Gatorade? I thought it was Right Guard or something.
Gatorade, and he did one for Coca-Cola, actually,
Coca-Cola.
In 2002 when I got there.
Sellout, huh? What a sellout.
Real glamour boy.
You get good money for doing those commercials or what?
I don't know. Never done one.
Come on, Dustin. Get in the game here.
I'm trying.
Dustin, Saskatchewan beat UBC 3 out of 4 times on the season. Two of those games, I mean, You guys did barely pull two of those wins out, but you got to feel confident. You won 3 of 4 against this team. Yes, UBC's got home field. It's going to be a buzzing crowd here at BC Place. They're expecting about 50,000 people, hopefully at the Dome on Sunday. Saskatchewan, BC, you guys confident coming into this one?
Absolutely. I mean, I guess the biggest thing is the fact that we've played them 4 times already this year, so we know what to expect, we know what they've got, we know what we can do, and we know how well we play against them usually. And so you can definitely come in confident knowing what to expect. That's always the biggest thing when you're playing in these kind of games, is usually you're playing against a team that you haven't played a lot, and you know, you're trying to do all that you can to prepare for them. But, I mean, we've prepared for these guys 4 times already. So I think we know what to expect, and I think we know what we can do against them. It's just a matter of us showing up on Sunday and sticking to our game plan and doing what we know how to do.
Dustin, you guys BC has a great defense, and they got Dave Dickinson on offense. How does a team stop Dave Dickinson? What's the game plan? What can you tell me about the game plan to stop Dave Dickinson?
Well, we've done it before. All you got to do is hit him in the mouth.
Yeah, is that what you do? You get in his face and you just do it, huh?
Well, the last few times we played him, we've injured him. And it's usually, and you know, I mean, I laugh. It's not funny, but
yeah.
But we know that when we can get pressure in the backfield and we can rush Dave Dickinson, he's going to throw the ball up there, and we can cause some turnovers, either through interceptions or we can hit him and try and force some fumbles. But he's definitely the key to their offense, and getting after him is going to be part of our game plan.
G. Rice Diamond, is he unstoppable?
No.
No?
No.
Why not, Dustin?
We got, our defense is better than his offense. Anything he can do on offense, I think we can stop him with our defense. We've got a world of talent on our D, and no matter what kind of matchups they try and put him against, we've got the personnel to cover him down, so we're not worried about G. Rice Diamond.
Awesome. And defensively, BC, they get pressure on the quarterback. They cause a ton of turnovers. They're awesome at home. What's Saskatchewan got to do to get through that?
Well, we just got to stand behind our veteran O-line. You know, we got a lot of guys with a lot of years lining up in front of our quarterbacks. So I think it's going to be a real battle in the trenches, their defense against our offensive line. And I have a feeling that we're going to come out on top of that. We usually do pretty well against them. But on the flip side, it's going to be the same. I mean, we've got a terrific defensive line who's definitely going to terrorize their O-line. So I think they should probably be a little bit more worried about it than we are.
And, Dustin, what about the BC Lions, can you tell me, that scares teams the most? What is their biggest weapon?
I think what BC has that not a lot of other teams do have is a lot of veteran players and a lot of consistency. You know, they've got a lot of good receivers. They've got a good running game, and they've got some quality guys on defense. So you know that when you play them, they're usually firing on all their cylinders, and you've got to be in it for 60 minutes whenever you play the BC Lions.
Special teams are key in this one, Dustin. You do a lot of that, and BC, that is a weakness on this team, is the coverage on special teams. Is that something you guys have to exploit?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Special teams is going to play a huge part in this game. You don't make it to these kind of championship games unless you've got a quality offense and a quality defense, and both teams do. And so the third phase of the game is going to come down to special teams, and hopefully we can put a few points up in that aspect and keep them off the board the same way.
If Javi Glatt makes a big tackle, is some of you cheering or absolutely none on Sunday?
Not on Sunday.
Not on Sunday.
Not on Sunday.
Not even in the highlight packages later that night if he's in there? Not at all for that game, huh?
Well, if we win, it might be a different story.
Okay.
You know what? I'm happy for Javi, and I'm happy to see all the other guys. I know Mark Norris out there, and Mike Lindstrom, another UBC guy. We got a lot of talent coming out of UBC that's on the BC Lions, and so I'm always happy when those guys are doing well. But I think Sunday I'm going to be a little bit selfish.
Awesome, Dustin Chernowski. Dustin, thanks a ton for doing this. Really do appreciate it. When you coming into town? When's practice start? You guys are off today, I think.
Yeah, we're off today. We're going to start up tomorrow morning, getting ready for these guys. We're coming in Friday night. Make sure we get all our rest, and we're ready for Sunday.
Do you watch the game before at all? Do you watch the Toronto-Montreal game, or you're practicing, you miss the whole thing?
We watch it. It's usually playing on the monitor somewhere. And so we'll get a chance to see it just to kind of get you in the right mood for the game. You know, we're not really focused. I know in Calgary,
they were announcing the score on the Winnipeg game, and I can't even remember what they said. I remembered it coming on the PA every once in a while. They'd give the updates, but you're just so focused on the task at hand. I guess it's just nice to know that there's other teams out there doing the same thing on the same day.
Is it playing in BC Place, Dustin? It's going to be so loud on Sunday. Does that get you a little more jacked up, or is it always a huge advantage for the home team?
Well, I think we're probably going to have as many fans as the BC Lions.
Oh, please. No, you're not.
Everywhere we travel, we've got the rowdiest, loudest fans in the league, and it's not hard to spot the green in the crowd. So I think our fans are going to represent just fine, and I think we're going to feel like we're playing at home just like we always do. So.
You love your Rough Rider fans, huh?
We sure do, and they love us, and it's a great relationship out here, and it's one of the best things about playing in Regina, I guess, is that the fans really, really back you and support you everywhere you go, win or lose. So I'm really excited, and I know for a fact that there's a couple of Saskatchewan Rough Rider fans out in Vancouver right now waiting for us to come.
Well, there'll be some, but we'll see how many, Dustin.
We will see how many. The thousands, Wiener. The thousands.
Are we looking at 10,000, Dustin?
I'm going 13,000 to 15,000.
You're going with you're crazy. 13,000 to 15,000.
I'm throwing that out there. That's going to be the challenge. I want anybody with any Saskatchewan blood in them to come on out to BC Place on Sunday.
Well, it'll be awesome, Dustin Chernowski. From the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Dustin, I do appreciate this. The media guy, we hooked it up through him. You gave me a call today, and I do appreciate it. And best of luck on Sunday, but I want BC to win, Dustin, just so you know that.
Okay, well, I guess that's where we differ.
Attaboy. Dustin Chernowski. Dustin, thanks a bundle.
Always a pleasure, Wiener.
Thanks a lot. Okay, we got one more break to go here on Wiener's Barbecue on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Let's see who my other missed call is here. I have no idea who these people are. Anyways, folks, we got one more break to go here on the barbecue. We're going to be back with Mikey Wall. Mikey Wall is going to be with us today. We're going to talk a little UBC Thunderbird hockey. We're going to get into UBC Thunderbird hockey when we come back. You're listening to 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Damn it, that skipped. Well, come on, work, you. Let's see. Take two. Michael?
Yes, Daryl.
My CD's skipping.
You think you would have learned by now?
What do you mean? How are you supposed to tell? How are you supposed to defend against a skipping CD?
I guess you're right.
There's nothing you can do. It's one of those things. You put up your hands and you go, what do you want out of me?
One of my least favorite things in the world is when you rent a DVD and it, you know, gets caught and then it skips.
Oh, when you rent
that.
It. Yeah, absolutely. The other one that I hate is when you rent a DVD and you don't have, like, a widescreen TV or anything like that, and you've rented the widescreen version.
Yeah. But who doesn't have a widescreen these days? Come on.
Me?
Yeah, me too.
Mikey Wall with me right now. And, Mikey, it was Sunday 15 years ago. Okay,
yeah.
I just want to ask you your thoughts on that. You have no idea what I'm about to ask, what I'm about to or do.
No,
you?
I heard you talk about it earlier about some basketball tragedy, was it?
No. That
was that 15 years ago today?
Today, I'm talking 15 years ago Sunday. The basketball tragedy was Magic Johnson announcing he had the HIV virus.
Right.
But
okay.
we're not going to talk about that. Is 15 years ago today? 15 years ago Sunday, November 5th, 15 years ago. Pavel Bure played his first game in the NHL for the Vancouver Canucks against the Winnipeg Jets. And did you get to go to that game?
I was at that game, Daryl.
You were.
I'm telling you, I went with my brother. who's now an employee of the Canucks. And I'm telling you, Daryl, that game single-handedly changed my view on NHL hockey. He brought a style of hockey and an electricity to that team that we didn't know existed. And he single-handedly changed the game on that evening by blistering by the defenseman on two separate times. And I think it was Pavel Bure who actually started, who was the cause, the reason for all the clutching and grabbing in the NHL, because nobody could keep up with him and players like him that followed him.
And Mike, what I've heard Cliff Ronning say it, is they said Pavel Bure, that might have been the fastest he ever was in his NHL career was that night.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that.
And it wasn't
and as I said, they didn't know at that point to clutch and grab. They didn't know. The defensemen didn't even have it in their brains that if a guy's about to go by you past the blue line, to stick your stick out and try and block him. And after that point, teams had to do that. They had to trap in the neutral zone, or else guys like Bure would blow right by them. But before him, there was no need to do that.
And I think, Mike, why you're so lucky to have gone to that game and why it sort of has a mystique over it. I mean, it's Jim Robson. That might have been his favorite game in Canuck history. I mean, I've just heard him talk about that game. I think it was game six in the Stanley Cup final versus the Rangers, sorry. But that game, that Bure first game, he loves it. That game wasn't on TV that night.
No, it wasn't.
And I remember me and my brother were listening to it on the radio, and you just kept thinking, wow, wow, wow. He had how many breakaways, how many chances, and he never scored, but it doesn't matter that he didn't score, does it?
It didn't matter. I remember specifically two plays where he basically just went right around the defenseman on one occasion. I think on the other occasion he split the defenseman, went in on a breakaway, couldn't finish, but every single person in that building was on their feet regardless.
And
it was spectacular.
And people were, you knew this guy was somebody, but you didn't know he was this.
No. No, and it's a shame, even though he didn't, you know, he had some problems with the Canucks, and he left Vancouver not on the greatest terms, it still is a shame that he didn't get to finish out his career. You know, he had those knee injuries that ruined his career, but he was fantastic. And he really, as I said, he led the way for other players. Now you're seeing them, Ovechkin, Malkin, Kovalchuk, specifically the Russian players. He led the way.
Is it, I mean, Mike, this is what's in my head right now. I mean, I'm going to swear, so cover yours if you don't want to hear it. Is it safe to say Pavel Bure, or fair to say Pavel Bure, he was just the shit?
It's fair to say that, Daryl. And you're very bold to use that type of language, especially on CITR. But, yeah, he was the shit.
Awesome. All right, Mikey, let's talk a little UBC hockey. I got to say, taking on Manitoba on the weekend, a team coming in with a record of 2-6, UBC gets the split. They go to 4-4 on the season, 2-1 win, where they didn't play that well on Friday. Mitch Bartley got two goals for them. He's got three on the year now in eight games. Not bad. They get shut out 4-0 on Saturday. Were you at that game, Mikey?
No, fortunately, I decided to watch the Canucks game either way.
But
damned if you do, damned if you don't.
But, Michael, a disappointing. You got to say, I mean, yeah, they're 4-4 right now, but that's a disappointing weekend, I think, getting a split there.
Daryl, it's disappointing on many levels. You're right, it's disappointing that they didn't win two games against Manitoba. It's disappointing considering after the first game we spoke to the coach, Milan Dragicevic, and he said that, you know, he was extremely disappointed in their play. It was an ugly, terrible game, he referred to it as. And they came out the second night and lost 4-0 in front of their entire alumni. It was the alumni night, the second night, the Saturday night. And, you know, Milan Dragicevic has worked really hard to try and get the alumni involved in the team, and to have them come out and watch that type of game, he must have been extremely disappointed.
Mikey, the UBC, they go to Saskatchewan this weekend to take on the Huskies, sitting at 5-5 right now. Then it's, I believe, they go to Regina. Then they've got Alberta coming here. Tough games coming up for the Thunderbirds.
Oh, extremely tough, Daryl. And, you know, I should say, though, however, regarding last week's game against Manitoba, they did face some extremely tough goaltending. Steve Christie, the goalie for Manitoba, rookie goalie, was fantastic. He stopped 47 shots in the second game. So, you know, UBC faced a hot goaltender. You can't really, you know, blame them. But we did see them on that Friday night, Daryl, and their power play has to get better when they go face Saskatchewan. Their power play just wasn't very good. They did get one power play goal, but, you know, they're ineffective the rest of the night. They should get Scott Lynch back in the lineup. He's coming back off of a concussion injury. He's been skating with the team, and he's listed as day-to-day, and they need him back because he's definitely going to help out their power play.
Right.
He's a key going into that weekend next weekend in Saskatchewan.
Mike, the power play 1 for 12 on Friday night. I don't know the official stat, but 0 for something.
They were 0 for 9, I believe,
0 for 9
night, and Manitoba scored all 4 goals on the power play, so they were 4 for 8
okay.
on the power play on the second night. So special teams killed UBC on the second night, and last year their penalty killing was fantastic. They and to allow 4 penalty killing goals against the team, or sorry, 4 goals on another team's power play is kind of ridiculous considering how good they looked on the power play on the first night.
Mike, back to special teams, though. UBC, they have been very good on the penalty kill all season mm-hmm. long, and they were, I think, Manitoba something like 0 for 9 on Friday night, so it is possible Saturday was just an aberration on the penalty kill, but their power play hasn't been good all season, and going 1 for 21 on the weekend, that's not good at all. That's bad. UBC, what you saw, what's this power play have to do better?
Well, Darryl, we saw it on a couple occasions, particularly when they were a 5-on-3. The only way I could describe their power play is predictable. And they basically had 3 players working the puck around the outside of the ice until one of the 2 defensemen came open for a shot. And that was pretty much consistently how they played on the power play throughout the entire night. And the goaltender was seeing all the shots. There were 2 UBC players who really weren't involved in the power play at all. They were just sort of standing around. They need to move around. They need to be a little bit more creative. They need to confuse the goalie. The goalie can't know where the shot's going to come from. And it's become extremely obvious with that power play as to where the puck is going to go and who's going to be taking the shots.
Positive on the weekend, though, Mike, Mitch Bartley coming in 1 goal in 5 conference games going into last weekend, comes out with 2 on Friday night, 3-time 30-goal scorer in the Western League for the Vancouver Giants. That has to be good for this team.
Absolutely. And did you notice something, Darryl? It was your first time to see the team on Friday. Did you notice how small he looks out there?
Not really.
Or how unnoticeable, like, not unnoticeable, but stature-wise? Whereas when he played for the Giants, there was sort of an aura around him. And he looked like a dominant player for the Giants, but he just kind of, you know, people don't realize how good this league is. And for a guy like him to come into this league and just, he's just not able to stand out quite yet.
Wow.
And he had 2 goals, and they were good goals, but he has some room to improve, and I think at one point in his career at UBC, he will be a standout player, just not quite yet.
Awesome. Mikey, good stuff, and thanks for hanging with me today.
All right, Darryl, you did a great job. By the way, you know, people don't, you know, offer you enough.
What are you talking
about? You're doing a good job, Darryl.
Oh, you're such a sweetheart.
You know, your show is good. You do a great job. You have a lot of great guests, including myself. And keep it up.
Cheesiest thing I've ever heard, Michael. Cheesiest thing I've ever heard. All right, Mikey, take care.
I just feel sorry for you. You're a volunteer and everything.
I'm just plain old pathetic, Michael. Just plain old pathetic.
Thanks,
I gotta
buddy.
Go the other. Thanks, Michael. All right, we're done. Thank you for listening to Wieners Barbecue on 101.9. He feels sorry for me. Whatever. Thank you for listening to Wieners Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. We've got the lights. We got a happening room. What's this? A rave? Yeah. We're in a rave room right now. You're listening to Wieners Barbecue. Like to thank all my guests, Mike Mosier, head coach of the UBC Thunderbird men's soccer team, Dick Mosier from the women's soccer team, Wilson Wong for coming on the show today, Blake Smeltzer, Dustin Chernowski, Tom Wolski, and last but not least, the one, the only, Mikey Wall. Also, I just want to say this one thing. Sunday, 1994, was one of the greatest boxing moments I ever saw. George Foreman knocking out Michael Moore for the heavyweight championship of the world. I just had to say it. It was exciting. Anyways, thanks for listening. Have a great day, everybody. Eric with Flex Your Head. You coming up right after me? I'll play this for a bit. All right. Bye-bye.
music singer. Always been a real close family. Lately, some of my old kin folks disowned some other boys and me. I guess it's because I kind of changed my direction. Hey, I leave me alone. I'm singing all night long. It's an old family tradition. Don't ask me why do you drink? Why do you smoke? Give me friction. I say, leave us alone. We're singing all night long. It's a family tradition. I have loved some ladies. I have loved your name. They both tried to kill me in 1973. When that doctor asked me, son, how'd you get in this condition? I said, hey, sawbones. Carrying on.